Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 30 years. What a big day in the operating room I had yesterday. I think the greatest compliment a surgeon can get is when you've done someone's hip or knee or shoulder or whatever, and now they come back because they want their other knee, hip, or shoulder to be operated on by you. And that's what my day was like yesterday. It's just the greatest compliment is seeing people, oh no, Dr. Clapper, I'm ready for my other side. This one feels great. Can you do it again on the other side? And the sweetness and the niceness, and the many of them are weekend warriors. So, 8.5 years I'm doing the show, right with Steve Paulette by my side. And you'll hear the bumper music today. The Rolling Stones. This could be the last time. I don't know. Maybe we'll play The Doors, This Is the End. But we'll see. I very much appreciate all of you listening for these last 8.5 years. And we're fighting a good fight to stay on the air, and we'll see. There's a lot of changes, as you can tell. And if this was the last show, I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate being with you in your heart, in your mind, in your radio for 8.5 years. But let's get right into it. I'm so excited. Today, my guest comes from the world of art. And it's my first love. Dr. Clapper, you're a surgeon, you're a surfer, you're an inventor, you're an author. I can go through the list of all the fun things I get to do with my life. But my first love, actually, is art. Because as a surgeon, as a surfer, as a radio host, an author, an inventor, it all comes from being an artist. And even a food critic. Wait till I tell you what I discovered at Trader Joe's to put on top of my eggs. We'll get into that in a second. But at 7:15, my guest calling in is an author, an artist named Jory Finkel. She just wrote a book called It Speaks to Me, Art That Inspires Artists. She interviewed 50 artists and asked them, what piece of art inspired you to become an artist? And why? It's a fantastic book. And there's three artists we're going to talk about today. Rembrandt, Modigliani. It's just a great book. And it's a great gift. But she'll be my guest at 7:15. But it made me think all week about the world of sports, of art and surgery, where inspiration took place. These are artists who say these paintings inspired them to become an artist. But where in the world of sports do you see that world of inspiration? Well, my favorite sport is surfing. The greatest surfer is Kelly Slater. Who inspired Kelly Slater? Well, he was surfing in the 70s and 80s, and his name was Tom Curran. And he's from Santa Barbara. He's the first guy to really blast off the wave and fly in the air. Now, it's commonplace to see these shortboarders do that. But the first, the inspiring one, was Tom Curran. 3-time world champion, 33 wins, a champion in every sense. But in 1990, because I'll have to ask Jory Finkel about that. When do you see the inspired with or competing with the inspirational person? In other words, in 1990, Tom Curran actually is surfing in France against Kelly Slater, his rookie season as a pro. And we're going to get into that. 1990 Lacanau, I don't know how to pronounce it in French, pro. Narrated by the great Jerry Lopez, who's the inspiration for all of us who surf. Remember what Jerry Lopez said. If you can buy it with money, it's cheap. Something to live your life by. And how about art? Well, since this is my show, I get to talk about whatever I want, which has really been the pleasure of this show for 8.5 years. thanks to the great Scott McCarthy. What do I want to talk about? Well, my favorite TV show of all time was Get Smart. And loving it, right? Maxwell Smart, Don Adams. In 1965, it launched. Changed my life. I'm 8 years old. I mean, I just fell in love with this whole concept. But where did the inspiration for Get Smart come from? Mel Brooks, Buck Henry. Well, a big shot in the studio wanted to start a TV show and went to Buck Henry and Mel Brooks and said, okay, as far as I can see, the biggest movies captivating the world are James Bond with Sean Connery and the Pink Panther with Peter Sellers. Make a TV show that combines the two of them.
That's fantastic.
That's fantastic. And they did. So wait till you hear. I mean, I'm 8 years old. I don't even have hormones yet, but I have a crush on Agent 99, Barbara Feldon, who, by the way, is 86 years old, and she's still as beautiful as she was when she was 20. Amazing. But you'll hear her talk about that show. You'll also hear from Buck Henry about the creation of the show. And as Maxwell Smart said, that's fantastic.
That's fantastic.
And in surgery, my inspirations, key surgeons, Dr. Wilson, Philip Wilson Jr. at Special Surgery, and Dr. Ranawat, who along with Dr. Insall invented the knee replacement that we still use today. They inspired me to be a surgeon, an inventor, and a professional, and the highest caliber surgeon that you could possibly be. So Dr. Wilson is gone, but Dr. Ranawat's still around, and you hear me talk about him all the time, and you hear me quote him when he said to me, Robert, remember, the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. Clapper Vision, I was on the morning show yesterday morning at 6:30 in the morning. Raj called me. It's kind of like Batman. He put a big bat in the sky. He put a big bone in the sky. Dr. Clapper, we need you to talk about Kyle Kuzma. What exactly is a stress reaction? And I'll give you a hint. The Clapper Vision involves taking some water and putting it in your freezer to make an ice cube. We'll get into the Clapper Vision later in the show. But let's get right into today's show. This is what inspiration is all about. You hear that music. You know something good is going to happen. Daniel Craig, sure, he's great. And he really is great. But the best is Sean Connery. Oh, God, it just... You don't ever want the movie to end. But this is what's going on in 1960. This music. And so Buck Henry and Mel Brooks decide, all right, we'll make a TV show about the Pink Panther and James Bond. And they come up with this. You can hear the James Bond influence. Talk about inspiration, even in the music. That's why Steve Paulette is so fantastic, and I definitely want to hear from him for today's show, as it may be the last Weekend Warrior show, of what it's been like to work side by side with a mashugana like Dr. Clapper all these years. But this is inspiration in music. The theme from Get Smart sounding like James Bond. Now let's hear from Buck Henry about the creation, being inspired to create the greatest TV show of all time.
It came along at a time when the relationship between the general population and the government was getting edgy, and we sort of had a voice in that my kidding, our kidding around with the FBI and the CIA, which had been kind of sacrosanct in terms of making fun of them. And I've heard in subsequent years that guys in the FBI really like the show, which also makes me happy. And that they have, wherever the FBI has its museum, they have a shoe phone and they have a cone of silence. I hope that's true. I don't know if it is.
Yeah, let's go back to Barbara Feldon and Maxwell Smart, where the Russians, chaos, has caught them.
All right, Smart, I'll make it easy on you. Where do you want it?
Where?
That's right. I'll give it to you any way you want.
How about Philadelphia?
Goodbye, Mr. Smart.
Wait! Before you shoot us, I'd like to ask her something.
What is it?
A goodbye kiss.
99, you hardly know him.
That's you.
Oh.
Wait a minute.
Maybe we lost the sound. The volume just went down.
Wait a minute. That's not a bad idea.
What?
An attractive man like Kosovich.
Kosovich.
A man of action, daring, strength. I think I'd like to have him kiss me goodbye.
99, how can you talk like that? The man is a vicious, rotten, chaos killer.
Everyone has their little faults, Matt.
Is this some sort of a trick?
Would I trick you at a time like this? I can't resist you.
99, control yourself.
It's those piercing black eyes. That cruel mouth. Kiss me, Kosovich.
Yeah, and here's Barbara Feldon talking about Get Smart.
Probably today it would not be funny, you know, what we've learned over time. Not necessarily the CIA, but the covert things that go on and are going on at this moment. That it, to make I just saw a rendition, and that's serious, you know. You can't be funny about it. But in the 60s, I think it was still... coming off of the aura of the James Bond movies and the excitement.
And here she talks about Mel Brooks and Buck Henry and what an artist and being inspired is all about.
Being an artist, you know, Buck and Mel being artists, artists always have an antenna that perceives something beyond what we're just reading in the newspapers. And so surely they were tuned into something, there's no question, because the series came out of its time.
There you go. How about in sports? 1990, Lackanau Pro, Kelly Slater and Tom Curran. The inspired one surfing against his inspiration.
Because the Quicksilver Lackanau Pro was the Pro Tour debut for a highly touted newcomer by the name of Kelly Slater, a surfer who had already earned the attention and praise of the world's best, who were eagerly anticipating his arrival. Slater's high wire act was already being dubbed the future. And Americans viewed him as their post-Curran clan. In semifinal two, Curran and Slater met for the first time on the world stage, an event not lost on surf historians or Slater himself.
Wow.
Here was the guy that was probably going to replace Curran. And Slater would be the first to tell you, Curran was his hero.
Yeah, it is a little intimidating because he is my favorite surfer. I think he's the best in the world.
Kelly was really, the focus on that event.
I've surfed against Tom before when I was about 14 or so, and he kicked my butt.
And those are strange heats to be in, because here you have the guy that you've kind of modeled yourself after, only little did anybody know at that point in time that Slater would go on to be greater than Tom Curran.
Having the talent is one thing, but being inspired is a whole nother story. Here's Kelly Slater as a grown man talking about talent and being inspired.
I think talent comes from, it's sort of a recipe. It's like a concoction of things. You know, sometimes people just have good timing. Sometimes people have a natural talent. Sometimes they get lucky. And there's all these sort of things that can happen. I think a bunch of those parts of the formula were given to me in my life.
He's so true.
You know, I think I was naturally talented. I think I was gifted with understanding the ocean, and it comes natural to me. You know, my dad was a real water person, and just growing up at the beach, watching waves, watching guys surf, all that kind of stuff, that became real natural to me, to understand how to maneuver on a wave and fit myself into that as if I was a natural part of that energy, a natural part of the motion that's happening in the ocean. So even now, I always feel like there's a perfect way to be in sync with what's happening in the ocean. You know, people look at the ocean that don't know anything about it, and they're like, that's crazy looking. But once you put yourself in the situation, you realize there's a flow to everything.
You know, speaking of inspiration, this show 8.5 years. I think today's a good day for you to call in, because hopefully after 8.5 years, I have inspired a few of you. Coming up next, we're going to talk to an artist, an author, about what inspires artists. The great Jory Fink will be calling in. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The number is 877-710-ESPN. waiting for Jory Finkel to call in. In the meantime, we'll take some calls. I can also do some clap revision about Kyle Kuzma. What exactly is a stress reaction, and why will he not be playing until it heals? My clap revision is, in the old days, we used to have an ice cube tray. It wasn't a machine in your freezer that just pumped out ice cubes. You actually had to go to the sink, turn on the water, and had an ice cube tray, which you'd fill with water, liquid. You then put it into the freezer, and if you were impatient and you pulled it out 20 minutes later, it wasn't completely frozen yet. It was slush. Until it becomes rock hard, an ice cube. So liquid, slush, and then the solid ice cube. Well, in a crazy way, the way my mind works with a clapper vision, when you jump from a height, land awkwardly, for example, and you're a basketball player, and now your foot hurts, you take an x-ray, negative. There's no fracture that you can see on the x-ray. You do an MRI, and the MRI shows you signal changes, edema, a black and blue mark in the bone. Can't see that on the x-ray. No fracture, but you see the reason for the pain is swelling in the bone, a stress reaction causing the pain. It'll heal on its own. It doesn't need surgery. That's a stress reaction, signal changes that we see on the MRI of bleeding into the bone. The next, the slush, the next level before it's a solid is a stress fracture where we actually see a crack in the bone that doesn't show up on the x-ray, but we see it on the MRI. That's the slush, if you will. And the bona fide crack in the bone. Remember, Kevin Durant busted his foot. Michael Jordan did. Pau Gasol, the Lopez brothers. It's called a Jones fracture that you can see on the x-ray. That's an ice cube. That's the solid. So when we say stress reaction, it's water, liquid, becoming slush, becoming a solid. It's literally what we see, what happens to a bone as it's traumatized. So I hope that helps. He'll be back. He'll be good as new. Just need to rest so that it can heal. All right. She woke up. She's with us now, the great Jory Finkel. Jory, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you.
Listen, the world of art, which you're an expert in, and your book is fantastic. It speaks to me. Art that inspires artists really inspired me.
Ah, thank you.
To do today's show.
Yes.
But I'm going to do it from a different perspective because this is a different kind of show where I get to marry the worlds that I love of art. I was an art history major at Columbia. I am a surgeon, the world of surgery, and I'm an avid surfer, and I love the Lakers and the Rams, sports fan. So these three worlds that I live in, passionate about, to me, they're the same. You just have to figure out what's the connection. So your book is about artists that were inspired by other artists.
Correct.
So listen to, you're too young to remember the TV show Get Smart, but this is a TV show from the 60s, 1965 it launched. Buck Henry, Mel Brooks saw that James Bond was the biggest movie, and so was Peter Sellers in The Pink Panther. The TV people said, come on, this is what people love right now. Let's make a TV show. And here's Barbara Feldon, the actress, just Agent 99, talking about what artists do, almost like they have antenna for what's going on around them. And I'm curious to hear what you think when you hear these words.
Being an artist, you know, Buck and Mel being artists, artists always have an antenna that perceives something beyond what we're just reading in the newspapers. And so surely they were tuned into something, there's no question, because the series came out of its time.
Out of the spying and CIA and the James Bond. What do you think about that?
I love that, and I use that, and now I will actually credit it to Get Smart or to Barbara, but I talk about artists as the antenna of our culture, because they do. They anticipate things. They see things. I mean, in some ways, in my book, I'm using artists as guides, as seers, to help us see things more clearly or see things we wouldn't have noticed before.
Interesting. And there are three artists in your book that, I mean, the whole book is fantastic, but I had to pick three.
Sure.
So I'd love you to talk about Lynn Hirschman Leeson.
Oh.
And the fact that she picks one of the greatest artists, who happened to be Jewish, by the way, Italian Jewish, which is like the best. It's like pizza that's kosher. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's right.
Modigliani.
It's like Fonzie.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just like, remember the Seinfeld scene where he's having sex and he has the bologna sandwich under the pillow because he wanted to combine everything together that he loves? You know, it's fantastic. So here's Modigliani, a painting that they thought was fake, that they thought was trash, because he did it on cardboard, not a canvas, because the guy had no money. He truly was a starving artist. But
right.
The way he tilts the head, the emotion in every one of his portraits, this painting is not a fake. Tell us about your meeting Lynn Hirschman Leeson and talk about Modigliani.
Oh, yeah. I have known Lynn Hirschman for many years. I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, but once upon a time I crossed over to the other side and I curated a show for a museum, and it included Lynn Hirschman, and it was inspired by an article I did for the New York Times on Lynn Hirschman. So I've been a fan of her work for many years. The art world is just catching up now. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, she had there was a gallerist in New York who left a major gallery in order to open her own gallery and show Lynn's work. Her boss wasn't going to show Lynn's work, so she opened a new gallery just to show Lynn's work, and now the art world is catching on. So Lynn has been a visionary for a long time, really interested in issues that concern people today, like surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
Are we living in a state of police surveillance or other surveillance? You know, how technology that we invent or that we create also creates us or shapes us in a way.
Hmm.
I had to describe the kind of work she made once, and I realized, oh, my God, she does photographs, she does conceptual art, she does text-based, she does all kinds of, she did a performance, she does all kinds of art, but she's actually made art in DNA as well.
Wow. So it makes sense that she would be the one to figure out how to actually prove that this allegedly fake Modigliani painting, with all this testing, is actually real.
Right. Well, she wasn't the one to prove. It was conservators at the Fine Arts Museum in San Francisco, where the painting is held, and the conservators... so they had the painting in their collection for decades. They thought it was fake. It's a painting on board, and sometimes described as a painting on cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
So its status changes dramatically when you think it's fake. You really don't take it as seriously. It wasn't even insured for a proper value.
Wow.
And then the conservators used a new tool.
Wow.
Who do chemical analysis, essentially, and they brought the work to the Stanford Linear Particle Accelerator so that they could look at the very molecular structure of this painting to compare it to what are known Modiglianis, and determined that it's authentic.
Love that.
So the painting, and what Lynn's interested in, is how the painting then changes status completely.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Before... it wasn't a Modigliani. It had no value. Now it's a Modigliani. So she talks about how this technology, the authentication technology, co-authors the painting.
Yeah.
It co-creates it.
This is why your book is so fantastic. This is just fantastic.
You look at it totally differently than you would
exactly.
Had it not been a Modigliani. I mean, I wrote about a fake Modigliani once that was being sold on eBay.
Mm.
You look at that a lot differently.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. There's one other painting. It was three that I picked. But there's one other one. And I got to give you credit because I did not know this. So all these years I've studied art. But it is David Hockney talking about the Edgar Degas copy of the, I'm sure I'm missing, Nicolas Poussin's painting. But you are really the star of this one because you point out that in Persian art, Indian art, Chinese art, Japanese art, there are no shadows.
Yeah.
That these folks, these cultures, in their paintings, when sun is in the room, in the painting, They don't paint shadows.
That's right.
But Europeans do. All right. I have to pay some bills. I need you to stay on the line because I got to talk to you about shadows in paintings and David Hockney's interpretation he's the greatest artist probably living right now, that he is inspired by what happens in this particular painting. This is why your book is so fantastic. All right, you're going to hang on the line, the great Jory Finkel.
We'll pay some bills.
We'll come back.
You got it.
Weekend Warriors, the number is 877-710-ESPN. I hope you're enjoying talking to an artist as much as I am. Listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show. Monty Python. Good job, Steve Paulette. And I can't wait to hear from you later in the show. Let me tell you, Jory Finkel, if after 8.5 years, this is the last show of the Weekend Warrior, I can't think of a better guest to have than someone like you who's an artist. Because with the world falling apart, it's only the artists that are going to save us. I want to pick your brain, though, before we get into David Hockney and his analysis.
Sure.
Because, again, I love the world. You just heard Barbara Feldon talking about artists having antenna for the surroundings. I want to talk about the sports world. Kelly Slater, greatest 11-time world champion, greatest surfer probably ever. But his inspiration was Tom Curran. We all have inspirations, all artists, all athletes, all surgeons. We need that in life. Kelly Slater here talking about the talent to be an artist, a surgeon, a surfer, and how it relates to being inspired.
I think talent comes from, it's sort of a recipe, it's like a concoction of things. You know, sometimes people just have good timing, sometimes people have a natural talent, sometimes they get lucky, and there's all these sort of things that can happen. I think a bunch of those parts of the formula were given to me in my life.
And seeing the flow.
You know, I think I was naturally talented. I think I was gifted with understanding the ocean, and it comes natural to me, you know. My dad was a real water person, and just growing up at the beach, watching waves, watching guys surf, all that kind of stuff, that became real natural to me, to understand how to maneuver on a wave and fit myself into that as if I was a natural part of that energy, a natural part of the motion that's happening in the ocean. So even now, I always feel like there's a perfect way to be in sync with what's happening in the ocean. You know, people look at the ocean, they don't know anything about it, and they're like, that's crazy looking. But once you put yourself in this situation, you realize there's a flow to everything.
He's an artist, right?
I love that. I just did the swim leg only of the Malibu Triathlon, and I wish I had been gifted with this understanding of the ocean.
And remember, as Jerry Lopez told me when he was a guest on this show, remember, Dr. Clapper, the water's actually not moving. It's the energy going through the water.
Uh-huh.
Right. I mean, oh my, talk about Zen.
Love all right. That.
So talk about David Hockney and seeing this Edgar Degas copy.
Yes. Yeah. First of all, let's talk about where it is. So it's at the Norton Simon Museum. And if you've ever been to the Norton Simon Museum, you know they have this great Degas collection. Well, the Degas that you've seen, that you've noticed, are the bronze ballerinas that Degas is famous for, mm-hmm. right? With mm-hmm. the little tutus that were made probably later. But so David Hockney talks about the least recognizable Degas in the history of Degas, in the history of the Norton Simon or any museum for that matter, which is Degas did a brush stroke by stroke, almost exact replica of a Nicolas Poussin painting that hangs at the Louvre.
Mm-hmm.
So the painting's in Paris. Degas is 20, 21 years old. He's a student, and he's part of this tradition of copying old masters. That's mm-hmm. how you used to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You would learn painting, you know, kind of like being in the ocean. You learn the ocean. You would learn painting by being in the painting, standing there with your own easel set up in the Louvre Museum in Paris, making a copy of a great painting from 1861.
Unbelievable.
In 1861. So he makes this copy of the Poussin. David Hockney is interested in it because if you know anything about David Hockney, he has developed a really interesting theory of optics.
Mm-hmm. That they cheated, that they used lenses and mirrors.
Exactly. He's written books, and there have been documentaries made about it. And it's really persuasive when you read it. It's also persuasive because David Hockney is such a great painter, and he's essentially saying even a painter as accomplished as I am couldn't do what Vermeer does.
Right.
Unless I was able to project the image somehow of real life onto a flat surface and copy it. And so he thinks that Western art took a real swerve, took a turn during the Renaissance because of the invention of lenses, shaving mirrors, that the greatest painters we know in Western art used mirrors and lenses in order to create an illusion of perspective. And that if you look at the other traditions, and he talks about Japanese art, Chinese art, Persian art, Indian art, they remain flat.
It's like the end of the movie of The Wizard of Oz, where she pulls the curtain and there he is on a loudspeaker.
Basically. And there's been a lot of resistance to his ideas because, people feel like he may be detracting from the genius of some of these artists. I don't feel that way at all.
Wow. Well, finally, I got a minute left. Rembrandt.
Yeah.
Gillian Wearing, tell us about Rembrandt.
Yeah, I mean, Rembrandt is just one of the greats. And one of the pleasures of this book, of course, was seeing which artists chose which painters or which artists, what are the choices made by these artists? Gillian Wearing is an artist from London who has a tradition of making self-portraits. Mm. When she makes self-portraits, she disguises herself. She'll even disguise herself as a family member or someone she knows, and then she'll do the self-portrait photographically. Well, she picks one of the most famous self-portraits in the history of painting, which is one of Rembrandt's last paintings.
Right.
This self-portrait at the age of 63, and she's just blown away by the emotional honesty. Mm. The aging that you can see, the wrinkles under his eyes. She describes his face as a landscape.
You're amazing, Jory Finkel. I don't know how you got the inspiration to create this book, but in the end, to become a great surfer, to become a TV writer, to become a surgeon, you actually need to go on the shoulders of the person who came before you.
That's right.
And to learn it in the art world where you can just see it. It's in front of you. It's not words. It's not in the ether, but you can actually see it.
You can see these connections.
It's a brilliant idea, and I applaud you, and I'm so glad I got the chance to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun to get to know you, Robbie.
Okay, my pleasure. We'll be in touch. The great Jory Finkel. It speaks to me. Get that book as a gift. Your family member will love it. Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care.
All right. All right, young lady. Warriors, I can't wait to talk to you. This potentially could be the last show after 8.5 years. It's so nice to see all the lines lit up, and we'll get into it. So stay on the lines. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Once and I told you twice. You never lived in my boss. Very long to be there. I'm trying to be easy. Here we go. This could be the last time. This could be the last time. This could be the last time. I don't. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I hope this isn't the last time. I'm fighting. The world's changing. We'll see. Stay tuned for Lakers Talk with Alan Sliwa this morning, right after the Weekend Warriors show at 9 a.m. Lakers Talk, brought to you by Santa Monica Toyota. Let's go to James in L.A. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
I can't believe I'm talking to you, brother.
All right.
So messed up that you're not going to be on, but there's hope. There's hope.
There's
right?
hope. There's a glimmer of hope, and I'm working on it. I'm fighting the good fight, so you all have to pray that we can keep doing the Weekend Warriors show. 8.5 years, a long time, but it's not my decision. I want to fight and stay on, so you got to help me.
Okay, man. Well, look. I grew up surfing. My family moved to Zuma Beach in 1956, and I lived at Zuma, and I surfed you know, forever on Point Doom. Did you ever surf at Point Doom?
I have surfed at Point Doom. It's a gnarly break. You got to be careful you don't break your neck so that you won't need someone like me to fix you.
And
what do you do for a living?
I work in a hardware store.
Oh, wow.
I sell tools and...
You sell tools. I think that would be my dream job,
is to be able
to know where every single tool is in the entire store and every single tool. All right, can I tell you something?
Go ahead.
Do you know where a screw came from? You know, like a screw with threads and pitch? Do you know where that was first invented?
Not the first one, no.
The Romans. And you know why the Romans invented the screw instead? They used to use nails. As my mother used to say, they used to my father, you're a carpenter, you knock nails for a living. She knock is K-N-O-C-K. She would pronounce the K. You knock nails for a living. My father would start to laugh. But the screw is different because it really gets a bite. It really gets a purchase. I use them in the operating room all the time. But it didn't come from carpenters. It came from the Romans. You know why? Because the Romans recognized that without water, there is no life. And that is why they invented the aqueduct, to get water to the farms, to the people, so people can drink and survive. But the problem is the land. You've got valleys and you've got mountains. How do you get the water sometimes up to the aqueduct? So they figured out that if you turn with a pitch, like the threads of a screw, you can get water to go up to the aqueduct. That's before there was a... Literally, you have like an ox or a horse going in circles with this pitch thread, which would allow the water to rise to the aqueduct. That's actually where a screw came from.
I love it. I love it. Say, look, I also I went to New York. I worked in the advertising business for a while there, and I had friends who lived in Far Rockaway. The Pearl family, I don't know if you...
Yeah, I know the Pearl family. Listen, you know how you get to my house, James and Zuma? You make a left at the gunfight. That's how you get to my house in Far Rockaway.
Well,
listen, I appreciate you calling. I appreciate the good thoughts, and let's hope, we'll pray we can continue to do the show, but it could be the last one, and I can't think of a better thing to do on a Saturday than to talk to you, James. God bless you.
Yeah, I love you, man.
All right, same thing. Same feeling from me, right back at you. All right, let's go to Antonio in Dallas. You're calling from Texas?
Hey, doctor. Thanks for taking my call.
It's my pleasure. Yes, Let me ask you a question. You're such a good guy, you could be a saint, which would make you San Antonio, and you're living in Dallas, Texas.
And the irony is that I've never been to San Antonio, the one place in Texas I've never been. Let's take a trip down there.
But I bet you they give you stink eye, and they all got guns down there.
Oh, yeah, I know. Hey, and if you ever need any help with the show, we got to get some variability in there. I'm all a registered dietitian. I work with surgeons with bariatrics, so.
Thank God. We need you.
Sure would.
Let me tell you something, Antonio.
Yeah.
You do a hip replacement, knee replacement on a patient, they have a higher risk of infection. Not if they're diabetics, not if they're HIV positive. You know who has the higher risk of infection? Obesity. So people like you actually indirectly make surgical outcomes better because of 100%. Healing, because of what you do. So keep it up, and thank God. What can I do for you? What you hurt?
Yeah, my ankle, and I was going to give you just a brief rundown. A year ago, I had a stress fracture in my ankle, and I think it masked the fact that I had damage to my peroneus brevis, which was confirmed this last week when I had an MRI, and just to briefly go through it.
So let me just explain with Clapper Vision what exactly a peroneus brevis. Do you listen to the show, or is this the first time?
Well, I've listened to it on and off, but then I called in. I said, it's the last show, but hopefully not.
Okay, let's hopefully it's not. The peroneus brevis, fascinating tendon. It's on the little toe side of the ankle, and there's a peroneus longus, and there's a peroneus brevis, long and short. Brevis is short. The peroneus brevis anchors itself to the fifth metatarsal, the bone that the basketball players break, called a Jones fracture. It attaches to the little toe side of the foot, and it helps you in pulling your foot out to the side. And let me tell you something. It's a tendon that you have to respect because it is a key player in firing and keeping you from rolling your ankle so that you don't sprain the ligaments in your ankle or create a fracture in your ankle. So whatever you got to do to get that to heal, do not Antonio. Let them shoot you with cortisone, stem cells, other stuff. No, this is something that you need to rehab. And if rehab doesn't help, then you actually may need a good foot and ankle surgeon who doesn't do anything but foot and ankle to be able to fix it and repair it, because it's a very important structure for the little toe side of your ankle. So it's to be taken seriously, not to be medicated and falsify that you feel good, even though by making it numb, you feel good, but that is not the thing that you should be doing.
Is ultrasound with physical therapy proven by research? Because that's what my doctor was saying, to go through physical therapy for a few weeks, and if that doesn't work, that we'd consider surgery. Because it says I have a 6-centimeter intrasubstance delaminating tear.
Yeah. You should certainly, I think your doctor gave you excellent, excellent advice. You always want to try to avoid surgery first, and that is the key. Ultrasound, doing the physical therapy, the rehab, wearing the boot, the whole bit. That's great. But I would love you to, as much as I respect what he said, I need you to do me a favor here in Los Angeles, in Texas, where you're from. Go get another opinion. You could stay with the first guy, but get a second opinion from a dedicated foot and ankle, you know, surgeon. It's a good idea, but his advice is excellent as a way to approach it first. And here's the visual, Antonio. Think of your foot right now has a blister, right? Blisters hurt, but internally you have a blister. If you can make the blister into a callus, it won't hurt anymore. That would be fabulous. Capiche?
Okay. Well, as far as running in the future.
Yes, you should be able to do everything. That's the whole goal here.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Doctor. God bless you for all you've done. Hopefully you get to keep on going, but I'm sure you have a lot of good endeavors ahead of you.
Well, I want you to do me a favor, Antonio. I just helped you. I want you to find a total stranger today there in Texas and do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. All right. Let's read it one more time. Stay tuned for Lakers Talk with Alan Sliwa this morning right after the Weekend Warrior Show at 9 a.m. Lakers Talk is brought to you by Santa Monica Toyota. All right, Warriors, coming up next, I'm going to tell some stories, which is what I love to do Saturday mornings with you on potentially the last Weekend Warrior show. You're listening on ESPN LA 710.